Thank. Good question. I don't know. Can we open window? Okay, you're gonna freeze there. And this is really against any safety policy, probably, and you know, fire hazards and all that stuff. Let me remind you again, when you do your evaluations, I'm not the organizer of the conference, okay? He is. Just kidding. Okay, thank you everyone for coming. I see, you know, that Azure is a hot topic in Ukraine, which is great. As you saw on the keynote, you have 95,000 developers in this country, which is really awesome. You're one of the countries in Central and Eastern Europe that has the biggest potential in developer base. My name is Luka Debeljak, originally coming from Slovenia and taking care of Windows Azure business across Central and Eastern Europe for 2 years now. So basically we launched in six markets so far. We're going to soon launch in 11 additional markets, and Ukraine will be one of these markets. So if your question is, when you see the presentations today, when you will get it, I can say only really soon, but I cannot announce the day, unfortunately, yet. But it's going to be really soon. So hopefully, let's say in summer, you're going to play around with this in Ukraine. So my presentation is going to be around ABC of Windows Azure. What it is, what made Microsoft actually invest into Windows Azure, and how can actually Windows Azure help you to develop your applications, or just to upgrade or extend your IT infrastructure in your company or in your organization. I tend to speak really quickly, so if I'm too fast, if you don't understand me, you can just ask me. You can also ask in Ukrainian, Russian. Victor will help you here, and we will manage to find an answer for you. So if we're looking at the big picture, and you're going to see this on many, many Microsoft slides, this is how we actually tell our story as a company. What is our big picture? The big picture is that we would like to have an integrated experience for anyone from going from private environment to public environment. And what is meant by that? As you know, we have a lot of products that actually manage your private environment, so that you can deploy Windows Server, you can use System Center to manage it, you deploy different applications on top of that. And then what we wanted to do is basically move the same logic into the cloud and saying, you know, we're going to build a huge infrastructure with similar capacities that you can just use as a service. So you can just go buy a subscription and use it as a service without worrying around underlying technology. And of course, since we are in this great position that we can actually provide on-premise and in the cloud software, we can do some really great things. Like we can give you common technologies to connect both of the worlds. So this is the big picture. We want to give you a common environment that's going to be that's going to include on-premise and public environment at the same time with the same common technologies. And of course, you know, why did we actually started to do this, and how did the whole product cycle started? Basically, it started around how the applications are structured today. What we saw is that applications are somewhat hard to manage. And if you're a developer, or if you're an IT professional or administrator, you know that there's a lot of problems of managing the applications and how they run. And applications are pretty complex. You know, we have, you know, from the hardware that has to be specific for an application to the operating software when the application runs. Then, of course, we have some middle-level software, you know, web servers, databases, messaging, workflow. And, of course, then business logic that we put on top. So you see, it's a complex architecture, even if we simplify it like this. Every application also has some specific characteristics. You know, maybe we need specific hardware. Maybe we need specific software components. Usually hardware and software is dedicated for an application. Maybe we want always on, which basically means that it has to be deployed in a cluster, always available, and similar deployment scenarios. And usually if we're developing in a proper way, then we need development environment, testing environment, production, staging environment, production environment, etc. So this is really expensive usually. it's really prone to have a lot of errors, and it's hard to manage. And we kind of figured that out. We figured out, okay, that's probably not the best way of how we can, how to manage the applications. Then another thing happened. We went around and we looked at the patterns of different applications. So we found some examples of problems in the world that couldn't be solved easily with the on-premise solution. For example, these solutions are from, or these problems are from US, but it can be the same in Ukraine or in any other country. For example, they looked at the websites of some of the online stores, Walmart, Toys R Us, Target.com, and you can see that in the December time frame, you know, their infrastructure is running and their applications are running in the same workload throughout the most of the year. Then in December, when everybody wants to buy stuff online, it goes crazy. And they have big, big issues with the capacity. And this is not the only problem. Like one more real life problem is tax. When you have to submit your taxes, taxation, every country has probably some period where you have to submit your taxes, unfortunately, right? So it's usually up to, I don't know, March in the next year for the previous year. So at that time, all the you know, workload is in 2-3 months. And usually it's 10, 20, 100 times higher than what we need during the year. And that was a problem that, you know, on-premise, to solve it on-premise, it was somewhat hard or it was really expensive. So we drill down into the application usage patterns. And there are some distinctive patterns that you actually see with your application. One of them is called predictable bursting. So this actually means that you have an application that will, at certain moments in time, require higher workload. Let's say we have a website where we sell tickets for the events. When there's a special, I don't know, football game, when Ukraine is hosting a football match, when we start selling the tickets, the application will go crazy. Then maybe when we start selling tickets for the finals, it will go crazy again. So we know when to predict the peaks of the usage of our application. And how can we handle that? Well, we actually have to handle it if it's on our on-premise infrastructure by having enough servers to handle all the peaks. Otherwise, people will come to our website and they will not be able to buy the ticket when they want to buy the ticket. So what you see is that many times we have a lot of servers running in our data center or on-premise, and we actually don't use them because there's no demand on our web servers. But we need to maintain them just to fix the demand in the peaks. Second application pattern is unpredictable bursting. You have a website with a you know, let's say a news website. It has a constant load of users, people read stuff on your website, then something happens. You know, they discover something that's really crazy and a lot of people go on your news site. And usually what happens, your news site goes down because it cannot handle the load. And at that time, you don't have a solution for that problem because you cannot predict that. Now, to buy enormous amounts of servers just in case doesn't make sense. There's no rationale in that one. So that one's pretty tough to handle. Then the third one is, example, you're really creative developers and you create the next Facebook, right? You don't know. Maybe you will. Maybe in two years from now, I'm going to be all crazy about some Ukrainian social network. Who knows? And you cannot know that. And now, how would you handle the workload? The biggest problem with Facebook at the beginning was they didn't have enough capital to invest into the servers. They had to invest $80 million early on to actually support the workload that their users were bringing. So that's a tough one if you're a small company. And then the final pattern was on and off. And this one we see more, I would say, in enterprise environment. For example, banking industry. A simple environment, they need to do some risk assessment on their portfolio that they're holding, and that's usually a task that needs a lot of computational power. So at that moment when they do the assessment, they need a lot of computers to calculate that stuff. Later on, they don't need it for a certain amount of time. And then again, they need it in a different time. And that's also pretty costly, if you run it on your local infrastructure. As in the time when you don't need the resources, they're just sitting there idle, and you don't use them. And the final pattern, of course, this one is ideal pattern, which nobody probably, or rarely we have it, which is, you know, that we highly have a high constant usage where we actually use most of our infrastructure, and it doesn't grow too much so that it's really stable and we know how to predict the costs totally. This one is ideal, and this is what we would like to have. So if we combine all of these different patterns, because it happens if you look in your infrastructure or your environment, it's going to happen that all of these patterns are associated with some of your applications. So we can find all of them in your environment. And then, of course, it sums up. If you have to run all of these applications in one environment, it becomes really costly. So Microsoft said, okay, we have to fix that somehow, and it's not going to be, you know, easily fixed with on-premise solution. So we were thinking we need to share hardware and we need to share software across different organizations that's going to run their solutions. We need to, you know, scale down and up, be dynamic when we allocate all that resources to you. It has to be resilient. So when you deploy solution on this platform, you know that it's going to be secure, it's going to run, you know, it's going to be available. And it has to be really simple to build that. And with that, we're going to save a lot of money. That was the core principle. And you see, it's pretty you know, rational thinking, how actually applications work. And then we said, you know, how can we actually do that? Is it possible to do? And it happened a couple of years ago when virtualization went big, and when Microsoft stepped into virtualization big time. And we said, okay, so now we have this tool that can actually enable us to deliver our vision. So with virtualization, of course, the first thing you do, you don't dedicate each hardware for a specific application. You have a hardware pool of resources on top of which you run your virtualized environment. Of course, virtualized environment on Hyper-V or any other environment that does virtualization, you know, basically the whole image is a file on the disk. You install all of the data inside of that image, you ramp up that image in your virtualized environment, and it runs the whole application. This is the core principle of virtualization probably everybody is familiar with, and most of organizations, honestly, today use some sort of virtualization, at least for some workloads, to optimize their hardware. They kind of realize that it's great to optimize the hardware and run multiple instances of different solutions or different servers on the same hardware. So we're using this. This is a common practice today. And of course, then we have different virtual machines we can deploy. So we said, okay, we have virtualization. That's going to be the core principle in our data center. The other stuff that we have is we would like to manage everything through software. So infrastructure has to be managed through software. Why? There are a couple of things that we can do by using software to manage the infrastructure. First one is to basically manage the density. So you have hardware, and on each piece of the hardware, you can run a certain amount of virtual machines. Now, if a software distributes the applications properly, you know, let's say that these are different applications, then we can optimize how much workload is on each part of the hardware, each server that's in a data center, each rack that's in a data center. We can optimize that and maximize the utilization. So if we want to have 80% utilized data center, we can do that with software so that it's spread around in a data center and utilized properly. It drives costs down big time. Second part is controlling capacity. So if we see that a certain portion or a certain workload is not performing well, we will switch it around. We will move it to a different part of in our data center. We will, you know, either delete a certain instance or copy an instance of a virtual machine if there's not enough resources or if there's too much demand on that virtual machine. The third part is controlling usage. So what you can actually do with software is you can either start some virtual machines, pause some virtual machines, stop some machines, and it's really simple to do that. You don't need to redeploy hardware and software and everything. You just stop, start, pause, move. Everything is pretty simple. And the final part, you're controlling resources. So even you're going to see later and today during all the technical presentations, you actually, when you're in a data center and you get a certain allocation of resources, you don't get your own machine, your hardware machine. You just get a certain portion of resources. So example, in our data center, physical machine has 4 CPUs with 16 cores and 24 gigabytes of RAM. And then when you deploy your application, you decide how much resources, how many resources you would actually like to use. So you can go for a small virtual machine with 1 core and 2 gigabytes of RAM. And that's just a portion of the whole hardware, of a whole physical machine. So we can easily control that, and we can optimize the workload on any of the physical machines. These are the four really important things that you can do if you move the infrastructure to be controlled through software. And we've done it also in the private environment. Because today you know that virtualization is just the first step. Virtualization enables you to utilize the hardware a bit more, but if you actually want to utilize it and make it dynamic, then you have to deploy something like self-service portal, where your users can go and just demand new workloads, demand new virtual machines, and they are dynamically allocated to your resources. So actually what we've done, we're taking all the stuff that we're learning in the cloud and putting it also into our private on-premise environment. So what you see that with the new Windows Server, the new Hyper-V stuff that's going to come, Windows Server 8, they've taken parts that they learned in our data centers, learned from Windows Azure and put it in Windows Server so that we can optimize on-premise environment as well. And it keep us in another way connected so that the both ways of how we deploy applications and think about applications is the same way. So today in private environment, you have certain ways of how you can achieve what I've described before. So you can have your virtual machines, you can turn them on and off. You can do dynamic allocation of resources to a certain extent. You have software to provision, manage, control, like System Center from Microsoft. So in a certain extent, you can optimize your environment. But if we want to really go and cover all of the application patterns that I said before, it has to be different. You have to build huge data centers to actually offer that as a service. And this is what we've done. So in the last, Azure is now on the market for 2 years. So it started a couple of years before that. We invested over $2 billion to just build data centers. So we have 10 data centers currently. We're expanding those data centers, building new ones. Here you can have a couple of numbers that are interesting to people who like, you know, to read about infrastructure. We strive to have uptime that's 99.9% or 99.95% depending on the service. We give you SLAs, which are really important if you're in the cloud. So the agreements of what we agree on, that we will give you availability of the service. So if we say it's going to be 99.9%, we back that up with financial guarantee. It's, you know, secured, standardized, because if you're running a cloud platform in a data center, then you have to prove to users that somehow you are according to the law, that the privacy compliance is there. And you can do only that through certification and through certain standardization. So we're compliant in that sense. And of course, there's another nice part which people also tend to overlook. If you're running huge data centers, you can optimize also kind of the green part of the running the IT. Because, you know, if you optimize how the electricity used, how the cooling is used, you can actually make it more green, to say in that sense. And we're trying to work hard on that one as well. So data centers was virtualization, what we want to solve in data centers, and what came out of that was basically Windows Azure. And what you're going to see in the future is probably most of our online resources. I don't know, if you're talking about Office 365 that you saw or anything else that's going to be running online, sooner or later it will converge on top of Windows Azure, because Windows Azure is our platform in the cloud for the future. And we did some nice innovation in Windows Azure. As I said, core thing is to have software managing your infrastructure. So we used the hypervisor and put on top something that's called Windows Azure Fabric Controller. And this is actually the core brains of data center. Because fabric control is software that actually looks at the resources, looks at the allocations of virtual machines, moves virtual machines around, kills them, spins up additional virtual machine, does the upgrades, does the geo-replication across data centers. So fabric control is actually the software that we run in data center, and it enables us to be really efficient. And, you know, we change the ratio of one administrator towards how many machines they can manage in a big time. So going from 1 to 50, then the scale went up 1 to 10,000, et cetera, et cetera. So with such software, you can manage huge amounts of machines really, really in an easy way. And then when you will deploy your application on top of Windows Azure, basically you will define your application. You will say what the application should, which resources the application should take. You will just send it over to Fabric Controller. It gets installed. Fabric Controller takes the data, takes the bits, install the machine, starts up the machine instances. For example, in this case, I just have a simulation for two. Does the network load balancing between those two machines, so you don't need to configure anything. We did that out of the box. And then your customers can actually access your website in this case. So we handle all the infrastructure for you. You don't need to worry about anything. You just think about the business side of your application. And of course, if you want to spin up more instances, Fabric Controller will do that for you. So instead of two, if you want four, you just tell Fabric Controller, I want four instances, and it will spin up additional instances. And now you have a clear idea of where we're going into the in our data centers. What I would like to touch further on is three key acronyms that are used when talking about cloud computing. So probably you have heard about them. Infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service, right? Yes, okay. You're really hot back there, right? And you're almost falling asleep, huh? Anyway, so infrastructure as a service is the first part where we actually provision just the infrastructure for you. This is something that can be, first of all, I have to clarify, this is something that can be done either in your private data center or in a public data center. And a private, with the word private, I mean something that is inside of your organization that you have total control of. And public, I mean somewhere where it's running in a data center on shared resources when different organizations can actually use the same resources to run the applications. So infrastructure as a service you can do privately. If you do all this, you know, virtualization, self-service portal, dynamic allocation of resources, can be done for your organization privately, even for your customers if you want. We also offer it in the public cloud. Currently, you can do that in a certain way on Windows Azure. I'm going to explain how. It's not yet there. It's not yet totally the same as on-premise environment, but you can still configure your own virtual machine images. You can upload them to Windows Azure, and you can run them in that environment. As I said, there are certain caveats at this moment, but we're moving there. And of course, this is a nice part. Here, we just basically take care of removing the necessity to buy hardware and to depend on hardware and manage the hardware. Because you just think about virtual machines and you deploy them either on your premise or in the cloud, wherever the you have capacity. It was not enough. We believe that the future, and also now slowly the IT industry also sees that, is somewhere else. We need to provide you even more. Because if we just provide you the capacity to deploy your virtual machine, you're still the administrator. You still have to manage the virtual machine. You have to install the software. You have to, you know, have the proper licenses in there. All that stuff is still yours. You just remove the hardware, you know, and the location where the hardware is, public, private, and you deploy the virtual machine. So we want to do more, of course. So we said, let's try platform as a service. With platform as a service, we take the barrier a bit higher. So we're going to actually manage for you the hardware, the virtualization, and the application platform. So when you deploy your solution, we take care of the rest. You don't need to worry about, you know, configuring your virtual machine in clusters, how the network load balancing will work. Don't worry about that because we take care of that for you. One example is that this is the most common scenario usually that's used in public cloud is to store data. Because what we have learned is if you store data in the cloud, it's really, really cheaper than if you store it on a, in your, I don't know, hard drive. Of course, there are people who will say my hard drive costs only €5, I don't know, I can store 200 gigabytes. Yes, you can, but that's your hard drive that's sitting on your table. Here we're talking about data that's geo-replicated across several data centers and has, you know, 99.95% availability and reliability and all that stuff. So it's a different concept that you, you know, your hard drive or something that's in the cloud. But the prices are really, really cheap for storage. So usually we start with the storage. We just store stuff. We have an enormous amounts of data we want to either present on our website, share with our users, or similar things. So here's an example of how storage works on Windows Azure. And I'm going to show you later how simple that it's to set up. Basically, you define that you want a storage account. You have a Windows Azure subscription. I'm going to show you how that looks. You say, I want a storage account. You get your storage account. And you basically get simple access to put your data into the cloud. It can be big files up to 1 terabyte. And it's actually an infinite amount of resources you want to use. As much storage you want, you will get as much storage as you need. And then let's say you put a certain file, let's say a big file into the cloud. You don't need to know which virtual machine, which storage, where that will reside. We take care of that. So we put it into the cloud. We make sure that it's, you know, copied properly, that it's actually it's copied in three different locations, because what we do with every data that's put into the cloud, we triplicate it. We put it in three different locations, two locations in the same data center and one location in the other data center in the same region. So if something's wrong with one part of our data center, you still can get access to your data, and we're going to make sure that's available for you there. But you don't worry about that. When you store, it just happens. It's in baked into the subscription price that you pay for that storage. When you ask for them, we know how to retrieve that. We know which one is the recent data that you put there, where it's located, and we give the data back to you. So it's really, really simple from the standpoint of a user. Store the data and be safe around that and get it back. And that is, and you actually, you just pay for the storage that you use. So if you use 1 terabyte, you pay it for 1 terabyte. If you use 50 terabytes, you get even probably bigger discount, and you pay just for 50 terabytes. So we're talking huge amounts of data. And as I said, it's geo-replicable. So we do it in through data centers. For those of you who are concerned about privacy, compliance, and similar things, there's a nice way of how you can specify which region you would like your data to reside in. So for example, in Europe, we have two data centers, Amsterdam and Dublin. They're both European Union, same laws apply. So we put one copy in Amsterdam and the other copy goes into, two copies. Let's say we store something in Amsterdam, two copies go in Amsterdam, one goes in Dublin. So the law coverage is the same. So your data stays within Europe and you can define that. And we have that baked into our platform. So how do we get this working? It's pretty simple. So you don't see any virtual machines. You will not work with virtual machines if you don't want to. You'll just basically put the application on your Windows Azure portal, and the platform as a service will take care of everything. We will deploy, you know, your solution. We will get everything up and running so that you can quickly access that solution. And we're going to configure every service. So it can be virtual machine, it can be network load balancing, it can be if you're using some other services that you're going to see today, a presentation for connectivity, we take care of that. If you want to use security services, we'll take care of that for you as well. So you can use all of the things. That's platform as a service. So it's another level of abstraction, and this is where Windows Azure actually lives. And the third part is software as a service. Software as a service is for all you developers or organizations that want to put the software on the market and maybe put it on globally. I don't know, since, you know, Russian is a common language here, you immediately, if you put it globally, you have a couple of markets that open for you. besides Ukraine, you can sell your software in Russia, you can sell it in Kazakhstan and probably some other countries because it's globally available. You just put it into data center. Everybody can reach to it and you can dynamically allocate the resources, which is the concept that I described before. So software as a service is the finished application, of course, that actually end users just use. It has just a simple way of how we can customize it. So usually it's not really customizable. We just pay a subscription and we start using it. Typical software, as I said, from Microsoft that's following this pattern is Office 365. If you want to use it online, SharePoint online or something like that, you just pay a subscription and you start using the application. And this is mostly where your applications will reside, you know, your CRM, your accounting or whatever application you're doing. And we have some really creative ones from Ukraine already, as I heard. So Windows Azure, what it helps you do is actually a platform that's running in our data center, so we call it in the cloud, that helps you build the application. I also explained that the virtualization and what we do on our on-premise, that's somehow captured in private cloud environment, as we call it private cloud, and software as a service is basically a platform where independent software vendors will deploy their solutions. So, okay, this was a lot of talk around what Windows Azure is, how it looks. So basically, it's the best way to do it is just look at it, how to get a feeling how Windows Azure actually looks like. I'm going to log in to Windows Azure. Currently, we support Live ID. We're going to extend that, so it's going to be different IDs that you can use actually to go to Windows Azure. And what I need before I get to this screen, what I need to do, I just go to WindowsAzure.com and I get a free pass, which you will be able to get at this conference. And you have to define your subscription. You just say, I want to subscribe to Windows Azure. You do some steps there. And then you associate your Live ID with your Windows Azure subscription. After you do that, you can, of course, log in into your Windows Azure portal if you know your password. I like to do all demos live, and this is what happens. So now I'm actually entering Windows Azure. And Windows Azure, if you think about it as a concept of a product, is actually a website. It's a web portal. This is Windows Azure. Because, you know, what we manage is resources that are running up there in a certain data center. So I have, of course, this is, you know, a kind of, I would say, developer slash IT pro way of looking at our infrastructure. So we have different things on my left side, you know, from my hosted services, databases, synchronizations, reporting. You'll hear all about this in details during these 2 days. But, you know, so when I created that, first thing that I want to know is maybe how to host some services. So let's see if I have some services hosted. So you see I have 2 subscriptions. I have 2 deployments that are healthy. I have a warning there that how I should probably do my deployments in a bit better way. But I can look into that one. So this is, you know, my 2 deployments. I have just 2 websites running just for fun. I put them up there and deploy them a bit with certain characteristics. How you actually would deploy something like that? Well, you have to develop it in a development environment, which is in this case Visual Studio. So if you're coming with a Visual Studio, and if Visual Studio loads, okay, then you can add some Visual Studio tools to your Visual Studio. Windows Azure tools to your Visual Studio, and then you get the project like cloud project. So I can just select, I'm going to say, new cloud project. And the second step that I get asked is basically what kind of project I would like to use. And I'm going to talk about that in a bit later. So for now, let's just say we're going to do a simple web application. So let's do a simple web application. I said, okay, Visual Studio creates the whole project for me. And the nice part is it's the same as it would be if you were developing your web application today. Nothing's different. You develop your web application, you do your HTML, JScript, whatever you do, Silverlight if you want, whatever you use in your application. The only part of your project that's different is there is a Windows Azure project part to it. And that one tells you actually how you deploy your solution. So you define characteristics, configuration of how you want Windows Azure to run your solution. So here I define, I don't know, .NET trust level. If you're developers, you know what that actually means, how you trust, what kind of trust your code gets when it executes. How many instances I would like. If I say 10, when I'm going to deploy the solution, then App Fabric controller will know and it will deploy 10 instances of my solution. The virtual machine size I can define. Endpoints. See all the details that I want to actually define around my solution. Storage, certificates if I want to use it to communicate. Virtual network, something I'm going to describe I think tomorrow in more details. So everything is defined in a file. And when we say deploy, which we actually can do pretty quickly, what I did before is basically you can say publish or you can say package. Package basically just packages your solution in a binary file and it gives a configuration file next to it. And you can manually then upload that to Windows Azure. Or you say publish and then Visual Studio automatically connects to your subscription and just pushes out the application. And that's it. And when it pushes out the application, configuration file tells App Fabric controller what to do. And the application is deployed and you get your solution running. So this is basically what I did with two solutions here. And you know, then you can see all the details around solutions. You can see this is my role, it's running, you know, what is my domain, et cetera. It gives you which operating system is running because we're updating our images of operating systems on which machines are running. Because if a new .NET framework comes, we release a new update on the guest operating system that your application is running on. And so it gives you all these details and you can manage them. Similarly, I can create a storage account. Storage account, as I said before, I just said I need storage, I create a storage account, I get a URL where my storage is located, I get an access key, which is basically used to encrypt connectivity and access the data, and I can start saving the data in there. I'm going to show you later how actually that works. But to get a feeling that this is, it's not new in the sense of how you develop your application. It's just new of when you press publish, where the application goes and how it deploys. And you don't need to worry about that. It's pretty neat, right? You don't need to install your local IIS server to install your local, I don't know, storage or database or whatever. You can just use what's running in the cloud. So now let's talk about building blocks. So I was talking about, you know, this is Windows Azure, but of course it has many, many building blocks that we're going to look at throughout these 2 days. So I'm going to talk about, I would say, 6 core areas. One is the computational area. What are our computational resources that which we can use? Then content and delivery, database, how we can store data in a database in the cloud. Then how we can manage the security and identity, how we can integrate different applications together, and how we can do some networking, lower level networking stuff, when connecting primarily on-premise environment with the public cloud environment. Okay? So regarding computational, what you saw was a simple deployment of something that's called web role. So on Windows Azure, now you get the idea that we are not talking just about virtual machines. It is virtualization and virtual machines are the core concept on our platform, but we're talking about something that's managed. It's a virtual machine that we actually manage automatically. We move around, we kill it, we put it in a different place in a data center so that everything runs optimized. And that's why we didn't want to call it just virtual machine. So we named it differently, we called it role. Because we say different, these flavors will have different end usages, different scenarios. So for example, we have a web role that actually enables you to run your web application. So when you're gonna define a web role in your Visual Studio, when I said my web role, let's assume that when it's gonna be deployed, Internet Information Server will be configured to run, HTTP endpoint will be configured properly, firewall will be configured properly, everything to run your web application. You don't need to worry about it because when you selected web role, all that is taken care of. Now, of course, there are certain roles that need just computational power, straight brute force, you know, for doing, I don't know, some algorithm calculations. you use something that's called worker role. So worker role will be a role that's more locked down than a web role, doesn't have internet information server set up, but it's basically just somewhere where you can run your code. And then we have a third one, which is kind of interesting because it's actually VM role, virtual machine role. And here what you can see is that as we see the need that certain configurations of your virtual environment are more complex and specific to your application, so we give you the ability to run a role that you define. So you upload your VHD, your image of the virtual machine, and we run it in VM role. The trick here is how we operate is that we still own your role in a sense of how we will manage it. So when you define your virtual machine role, well, you actually have to install certain components on it which can connect to Windows Azure App Fabric, the software that operates the data center. So when you deploy your virtual machine role, we're going to still look at it, and if it's running in a certain area of data center that's not optimal, we can kill it and we can move it into another part. So it's a bit trickier at this moment to use virtual machine role if your application is not written in proper infrastructure. So to clarify that a bit, if you're using, if your application is in any way relying on some data to be present in your memory or stored on the local hard drive, that might be a problem. Because if we kill that virtual machine role and move it into another part, then you might lose some data that your application was working with. So your architecture has to be done in a way that you store all your data in a persistent storage. We have persistent storage in Azure, and that's what I showed you before. So you just have to change the architecture to store the data in a persistent storage in the cloud, and then your virtual machine roles will actually work pretty well. So it's a stateless concept because we move stuff around our data center all the time. But basically we give you patterns of what, you know, we guide you of what you actually want to do. And for developers, we go even further because, you know, you saw there that, okay, I have Visual Studio, I have .NET framework. The MVC pattern of how to deploy a web application is pretty popular. So we configure that for you. So you say, I want to do MVC project on Windows Azure, and we configure everything for you. You just write your business code and you deploy it on Windows Azure. And another thing that we realized when we started with this is that we have to be open. Microsoft is honestly trying to open up everything that we have in terms of our products, which doesn't mean that we give them out for free. That's a different thing, right? But we're opening up, and that means that today, if you are, I don't know, PHP developer, yes, you'll deploy it up there. If you want to run MySQL, run it up there, why not? If you want to use Node.js, that's pretty popular now in these days, if you're a developer, we can give SDK for you, so you can actually use that and deploy your application. And I can show you, for example, if you go to the portal, and this is our main portal for main product portal, I would say, Windows Azure. It's you can go deep down in different things. So you can go into features that I'm going to explain today about. You can go into scenarios when to use. We talked about that a bit already. If you're a developer, you go according to what your flavor is. So I don't know. You want to go Node.js? You click there. And it tells you, this is, you know, what you have to install. This is the video how you're going to use Node.js on Windows Azure. Go. I don't know. There was Java, PHP, and then some other stuff that's going to come up. So it's open to any kind of application you want to run because it's a cloud platform. It has to be open. So now I hope you get a simple idea of how we manage this and how we actually think about platform as a service. So it's much more than just virtual machines on your hardware. Okay, we saw how to deploy a simple application. So we can move forward to the content storage. So I said we have ways of how we reliably and persistently store your data in the cloud. And of course, there are different ways because there are different needs, actually. So you can have a blob storage, table storage, content delivery networks, Windows Azure Drive, and queues. These are the things that are actually you will hear about more today. Quickly, I'll go through some of these. We realized that, first, blob storage is for large binary objects. You need to put a terabyte file into the cloud, you'll use blob storage, you'll put it there. You need your video files to be there to do the streaming, you put it there. You just use a blob storage. And you can do different ways of how actually you do that, but it's terabytes and terabytes of really cheap storage. This is not relational data. So it's not a relational database. This is just like a file system in the cloud. You put the stuff in the storage so that you can link it on your website or whatever. What we do nicely with it is then content delivery network. So how many of you know the concept of content delivery network? Okay, some of you. So for those, this is going to be boring, but for the others, let's go quickly around what content delivery network is. So you have to think here about, we're now playing in a global space. So our application is available globally. We're not just in Ukraine anymore, right? Because this is the concept also that it opens up your market for your applications. So what content delivery does is actually enables you to put the content where the user is. So if I'm from Japan and I want to use the super Ukrainian social website that we're building, and by the way, if you're building them, I want to be a shareholder there. Just kidding. So if you want to use that, then it's probably not going to be really efficient to go to Ukraine to that web server to get the content because the latency will be just too high. So what you want to do is to have a local data center where you can just get your data quickly. And this is what Content Delivery Network does. So basically when you enable it, we have 26 different locations around the world. Some are in our data centers, some are with data centers from either telecoms or whatever, or other providers of CDN. And when you enable that and the user wants to request a certain file, we reroute them to the local edge server, and then they get the location, they get the data really quickly. So basically, we out of the box give you a way of how to distribute lots of content to the to every person where they're located. And this is really, really powerful, especially if you want to go global with your solution. So storage with content delivery network, they work hand in hand, and it's really proven really, really well with media sites, for example. We have many, many cases where the local newspaper or TV or media portal goes on Windows Azure, and they enable this content delivery network, and they see the performance gains that they get. And they just love it. It's amazing how it works. Second storage that we have is also non-relational data storage, but it's done in a way that you can easily query around the data. So you can create a table, a simple table, where you put different data in the table. In every row can have a different structure. So it's basically just a way of how you semi-structure your data for easy querying, because that in certain scenarios makes sense, but still it's not a full relational database. It's just a quick structuring of your data, and again, you can have enormous amounts of data stored here. Then we have two additional concepts there. One is, first I'm gonna talk about Windows Azure Queues, and this is kind of messaging system that you can use between your rows that run in the cloud. Because as you're gonna develop your applications, what you're gonna learn is that you will not just run one role. You will probably end up running 5, 6, 10 roles, 60 roles for your application. And then there are different ways of how you communicate between those roles. And one of them is to use Azure Queues, which is basically a messaging system that's reliable and persistent so that you can move messages around. And sometimes you actually need your application, sometimes it's written in a way that it assumes it will have access to some drive, like hard drive in your computer. And since we're in the cloud, we cannot use the local hard drive in a role, because I said that's a problem before, because we move the roles around. So what we do, we emulate storage to act like a drive, and then you connect it to your role. So you spin up your role, and then a simple script connects the drive to your role. That's persistent storage, and you can use that storage then as a local hard drive. And if your role falls down and we put it somewhere else, the storage stays persistent. So that's how you actually can move your application pretty easily to the cloud. So that was an interesting concept of that we introduced. Okay, so cloud storage, I showed you. I'm going to quickly show you what how it looks like. I can access it in different ways. It basically has an endpoint and it has a primary access key that you use to encrypt the data that you go to when you go to the cloud. I can also access it in my Visual Studio. It has now integrated Explorer to go to the cloud. So I see my blob storages, I see my tables, I can see everything that's running in the cloud. So now Visual Studio is connecting, if my account is set up properly, it's going to connect to my account and give me all the storages that I'm running in my Azure storage. There are certain other, this is probably going to take, because it's a live demo, it's going to take a while. There are certain other solutions that I'm using personally to go and manage my Windows Azure account. One of them is Cerebrata. Okay, this is interesting now. It's always like that with live demos. Nothing works. I don't have an internet connection. That would help. This one, I guess, doesn't work. So, too many people online now, I see. But I am here, so I don't know what's... Okay, so now it's spinning up. Okay. Okay, so now, okay, something happened, changed. We're live. So now you see that I already got the blobs in my Visual Studio. I have a test table that I've written up there in my storage. I can look in this table and I can see the different data that's in there. And as I said, table is just a semi-structured storage. You know, every row can have different data information, so I just put some random stuff in there. And I also wanted to show you some partners have made some great tools to actually operate on top of Windows Azure. I like this one, Cloud Storage Studio from Cerebrata. I don't know. I started using it. It's a trial. You can go and use it, but it gives you a really nice way of how you can look at your own subscriptions, how you can look at your tables, queues, containers. You can do some storage analytics. It helps you know see how many requests was up to the storage and similar things. So it's a pretty nice way of how to use it. Of course, I'm not saying that you should use this. This is just one of the tools. There are many free ones. You can use just Visual Studio, whatever works for you best. So here, for example, I could also look at the same way at my table. The key concept around is that we have API and REST access to our services in the cloud. So whoever knows how to program that can develop a nice user interface around it. Okay, so that's quickly storage. And I could just upload. I could just put stuff on that storage. I could take a file, upload it. I could download it, whatever. It's pretty simple, straightforward. So I'll quickly go, because I know I'm out of time, I'll quickly go through some other functionalities we have. So far what we were talking about was actually non-relational storage, right? You know the concept of relational databases and stuff. So we also give you a service that is acting as a relational database, and that is SQL Azure. It's basically SQL Server in the cloud, and we're adding capacities and functionalities on this SQL Azure. How the architecture is done on SQL Azure, it's pretty complex. In the way, we're running many instances of SQL Server, we're sharing databases to put your data in there. It was a complex way of how that works with App Fabric controller, but we made it, we can offer it as a service. And this is really nice because now you have the full capacity of your SQL database, but it's running in the cloud. And the nice part is I connect to it in the same way as I would connect to my local database. We use the same tools, we use the same protocols to get to the data, we use everything in the same way. So, for example, if I'm sure I'm going to show you later how quickly you can connect to such a database. It's really amazing because it's the same concept as you have locally. And what we're working on, and you're going to hear about more, is SQL Azure reporting, data sync, how to synchronize data on-premise to the cloud, between different databases in the cloud. federation, a concept of how to actually extend the database to, I say, unlimited amount of space. And caching is also part of that service, which basically gives you a way of how to use cache. We have a service that actually does the caching, you know, some data that's quickly available to your application, and you can use that as a service. So many, many services around relational database are there. Overview quickly in your account. Okay, I'm going to close Cerebrata. In your account on Windows Azure, I have databases. And here I can just create new servers. I say, I want a new server. I create a new server under subscription. I get my server. I upload my databases, and I start using them. I just pay for what I use. If the database is bigger, I'm going to pay more. If it's really small, I'm going to pay a really low amount of money. We actually currently did some pricing, and we saw that if you want to run your web application in one role with a 100 megabyte SQL database and run it for the whole month, that costs you below $20 per month. So that's kind of a good price, I would say. And you know, the prices are going down and down and down. So because it's just, you know, with the massive scale, you can actually lower the prices, and we're actually reflecting that in our end price. So MySQL server is just named differently. This is the name of MySQL server in the cloud, but I can access the server in the same manner. So if I would use something like SQL Server, I don't know, let's see here. I have a Management Studio for 2012, the new Denali server that you can also try and download. When it pops up, I have already my credentials here. So basically, this is my server in the cloud. I say I'm going to use SQL Server authentication. I say connect. And you know, it's pretty boring because you're going to see the same thing that you see locally. You see, it's my Management Studio. It's my databases. I do the queries, my adventure works, tables, whatever I want. Same way as you would do locally. But now I'm moving up to Western Europe. So that basically means to Ireland. And I'm looking at this data, even though my internet is not working that well. Okay, to finish this up, we're going to just touch on security and identity, and I can talk about that a bit more tomorrow. We have a way of how to authenticate users in the cloud, and it's a different concept now with applications once you move them to the cloud. We rely on something that's called claims-based authentication. So I think I talked about it last year a bit about that. So how many of you know what claims-based authentication is? I totally know who's working with Azure here. Okay, it's quickly. This is a topic that requires more time. But quickly, what we actually did is we discovered that if you're putting your application up in the cloud, one thing that you don't want to do is include any identity service in your applications. You don't want to store usernames and password in your application, because that is not the way how first users want to access it, because nobody wants additional username and password. And second, you cannot scale with such an application. So what we've said, we created a new way of how you do your security, and that's called claims-based authentication. It basically means that the application expects a set of claims, basically a set of data from the end user. So how the whole concept works is that we associate our application with a certain identity provider. Now think Facebook. Facebook is an identity provider. When you log in, you have your Facebook identity. So we say our application will work with Facebook login. We join them together. There's a way of how you do that. Okay? So now, and they exchange metadata, they talk to each other, the services, that's not our business. So now when I go to the application, what you set in your application is, provide me your Facebook name. You know, I want to look into your Facebook data. You read that stuff, you go, okay, I'll do that. I go to Facebook sign-in page, I read the policy, you know, and Facebook says login like this. I authenticate, I put my Facebook stuff in. Facebook identity provider. And an application can then see where I was and look at my photos and whatever it wants to do. So you see, the concept is we're moving up. application, ID, whatever you want to use. But you don't store that in your application. You just tell what you need, and this is the set of claims. Okay, and then the next part that we also, you will probably hear more about during these days is connectivity in the cloud. So if you have a cloud application, or basically if you have applications that are globally deployed, you need to somehow connect between them. And you do that with something that we called Windows Azure Service Bus. So how many of you have ever played with a product like Bistock Server or something similar? Really? No. Enterprise application integration, that concept is known, right? Yes. It's not a pop quiz. I'm just trying to figure out. The thing is that even back in the old days, when we had our on-premise environments and different solutions running in there, you know, our SAP system, our Oracle database, God forsaken, our SQL Server and all the other stuff, we had to integrate them somehow together. And we did that with certain products. One of them was Bistock Server or different workflows and similar things because they're actually talking in a different way and we need some glue in between to enable the connectivity. Now imagine we're in the world with the data center and we have different parts that want to connect to each other. It's hard to do that today, right? So my social website will have a hard time connecting directly to Japan, to the server in Japan, because there are many nets between firewalls and all the other networking stuff. So what we are doing now is giving you a service that enables that connectivity. So I go to an endpoint in the cloud and it's okay because it's from the secure environment. I can open that channel up to the cloud. The guys in Japan do the same. And then the service takes care of the message transport from one endpoint to another. Basically, that's ABC. We put a service bus in the cloud as a service that you can use to have a global connectivity between different applications. I'll let this settle a bit and then we move on. I don't have enough time to go into details. We will go there later on. I'm just trying to tell you what all we're trying to do. The final part, I know Victor is really worried now how long I'm going to go on, is around connectivity. I also said that it's really important, and I'm going to show a demo around this tomorrow, is around how to connect your on-premise environment with your cloud environment. Because you know what? Many applications will not be fully move to the cloud. Why? I don't know. Maybe it's data relegation. Maybe you're not allowed to move the data in the cloud. Maybe you have such a great solution on-premise that you cannot move it to the cloud. For example, I always use this this customer, EasyJet. EasyJet is one of our customers and they have all the data in Oracle database in on-premise. I think it's Oracle. They do all the reporting, you know, booking of the tickets and all the stuff. But they wanted to move, they wanted actually to change the way how people can check in on the airports because they didn't like the terminals where you sit down and you have to wait in line. They wanted to do it mobile in a different way. So they created a solution on top of Windows Azure, connected it to their data center and their core database, and then deployed it on all different devices. So now for EasyJet, you can actually go to a person that has a tablet PC or a laptop or even I think a phone, and then they could go on their website, check in a person, and it goes back into their central database. It works. And that's a concept that we're going to see in many, many cases. So hybrid scenarios where something is running on-premise and something is running. And we can do that in different ways. One is that is called Windows Azure Connect. And I'm going to show tomorrow how that actually works. And you know, it basically gives you the connectivity between on-premise and the cloud in a low level so that the computers can talk to each other. And then there's another interesting concept around networking is Traffic Manager, which basically gives you the ability to, for another layer of, I would say, logical load balancing. For example, here you can configure, let's say your website is running in 60 roles on Windows Azure, and you know that 10 of those roles are running in Japan, in that data center, 10 roles are running in Europe, and I don't know, 10 roles are running in USA. So now you can do a layer on top of that and say, If a customer is coming from US with this IP address, then I'm going to route them to the US data center. If they come from Europe, it's Europe data center. If Japan, it's Japan data center. So basically, we do a logical policies on top of where to route the data. So it's not networking stuff. It's more just a logical way of how to move the data around. So at the end, you know, who is using it? We like at Microsoft to try out our own stuff. And actually, the one of the first and best case studies was our media platform that's used on Microsoft.com. It has it says here 40,000-50,000 requests per day to stream video content, and they moved everything actually on Azure. They already updated it for 10 times. They doubled the web service capacity, and look at this is the availability, 99.9957, and it's running for almost 2 years now. So the end cost was like this. So before we were running it on you know, we had our data center and, you know, we set up all the servers, etc. Then we moved it to Azure. Look at the savings, look at the uptime. Look at the ways of how we can actually manage now our infrastructure. And that's real life. Whenever you go to Microsoft.com and you want a video from our site, it's serviced through this portal. So, you know, we're using it internally, and we have a pipeline to move all the applications, internal applications, on top of Windows Azure. And of course, we have customers, we have partners, we have also some Ukrainian customers and partners that are actually using Windows Azure. And as I said, in Central and Eastern Europe, we're present for 2 years now. So we see a lot of traction, and it's becoming really, really interesting as a development platform. So to finish up, how to get started? The core portal, when I showed you, is windowsazure.com with all the different SDKs and downloads. But Victor also arranged that you have a local website where you can go, and if you're interested, you will get a pass to start using Windows Azure. I think it's 30-day pass, so for 30 days you can get on Windows Azure and start using it and play around with it if this is something that you want. Okay, with that, I'm gonna say thank you because I'm over time. I hope it was interesting, and if you have any questions, I'm gonna be here. Thank you very much.